Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. The U.S. Census data gathered last year is going to be delivered a little later than expected, but the Census Bureau released a first data set yesterday that offers a preview of what we might expect. In Michigan, the takeaway is less representation. Our state's population has grown at a slower rate than other parts of the country. And when Michigan's Independent Redistricting Commission sets to work this year, it means we're going to have one less congressional seat than we do now. John Lindstrom is the former publisher of Gongmuir News Service Michigan. He covered state politics for more than 40 years, and he's with us today. Hey, John.
How are you?
I'm all right. Should this news about the population drop and the change in our number of districts, should that come as a surprise to people?
Well, first of all, we didn't lose population as we did according to the 2010 census. We just didn't gain it as fast as states like Florida and Texas. And of course, California, for the first time in its history, is going to lose a seat.
Yeah, 2% growth, 2% growth, which is a slower rate than the rest of the country. Thank you for the correction.
Right. And this is the fifth consecutive census in which we will have lost a congressional seat, at least one. We were, from the 1962 election through the 1980 election, we had 19 members of the U.S. House, 21 electoral votes, And now we're going to be down to 15 electoral votes with the two members of the U.S. Senate. And it's quite a striking change in terms of the state's overall strength, and not just Michigan, but the Midwest's overall strength. Midwest grew slower than any other region in the country. This, of course, is the region that at one time was the West. You go back far enough, and of course, right, it was the industrial powerhouse of the nation. And now a lot of the industry has moved south, moved west. Part of that is to avoid unions, and part of it is for, you know, ever since the invention of air conditioning, people have moved to places that they otherwise considered inhospitable. But it is astonishing. I mean, if someone wants to look at a good indicator of how different it is, if you pick up a novel that came out in the 1950s called Advise and Consent, it won the Pulitzer Prize. It's about the U.S. Senate. But Michigan was featured in this novel as the powerhouse of the country. The Senate Majority Leader was from Michigan. The Vice President was from Michigan. And of course, you think of all the powerhouse members of Congress that Michigan had. Of course, John Dingell and Bill Ford at one time. John Conyers, you know, long serving legislators. Now the longest serving legislator seems almost like a kid, Fred Upton. He was elected in the mid 80s. It's interesting because you have theoretically nobody who could decide to retire and say, okay, I've had enough. I mean, all of our members of Congress are relatively recent in congressional life. And so, you know, no one's going to probably step away and make it easy for the Redistricting Commission to try to figure out a way of avoiding trying to force a runoff between two incumbents.
Right. And we have some people who are very new to congressional office, including Peter Meyer, Republican, also Democrats Haley Stevens and Alyssa Slotkin. Now, The early numbers suggest to us that the areas of depressed growth include all the congressional districts except District 12, Debbie Dingell's. But my read on the early data is that the areas that had the most depressed growth, so to speak, included Brenda Lawrence's district, Haley Stevens' district, number 13, Dan Kildee and Andy Levin's. Is there anything that you can foresee about how the Independent Redistricting Commission might try to square this within the general rules that are before them?
Well, you deal with the reality that one person is not going to be going to Congress. It would be interesting, even more interesting than we had originally thought, because if the redistricting process had gone on as it has for the last 40 or so years, it's pretty clear what would have happened. You have a legislature who is under Republican control. They would have obviously drawn a map that axed out a Democrat. The governor would have vetoed that plan. You would have had a fight. It might have gone to the Supreme Court. I'm not sure what's going to happen this time. You know, a lot of the actual mechanics of how these districts are going to be drawn are not yet resolved. And one of the things that the commissioners on the district, on the redistricting commission, have been doing is just learning some of those basic mechanics. If you follow the meetings, to the average person, they may seem rather dry, but you're just getting into, okay, let's open the hood. Let's start going through. Here's the water pump. Here's the fuel pump. Here's the carburetor. How is this all going to come together? And that is what they're going to have to figure out. There are a variety of ways that you can process these things. And then you have to deal, of course, with the factors of communities of interest, compactness, trying to make sure that you don't break too many lines as you go through this. It's going to be an even bigger challenge now that we are losing one member. The math all suggests that the Detroit area is probably going to lose a representative. It's possible that you could see a situation where, say, Dan Kildee and the newly elected Republican in the Thumb area find themselves tossed together, something like that. But it's until they start processing the actual numbers, until we actually see what the census tracts show, and that won't come for some number of months yet, we really won't know how this can be resolved.
The thought of Dan Kildee and Democrat Dan Kildee and Republican Lisa McClain having to go head to head just makes my head spin.
Well, it makes your head spin. What do you think it'll make their heads do? That could remain a possibility. Instead of saying forcing somebody into a primary runoff, you could take two incumbents and force them to do the same thing in a general election. That's not out of the realm of possibility. This is what you run into in a situation like this. It's always a tricky situation. And even when we had 19 representatives, you ran into this occasionally. In the Oakland County area, after the 1970 census, you found two Republican incumbents forced together and ended up running against each other in a primary, even though the state didn't lose any representatives at that time. This is just the luck of the draw. And of course, this is mandated by legislation passed by Congress. We have not had any increase in the total number of members of the U.S. House for 170 something years. That's not stipulated in the Constitution. That too is also by congressional statute. So in theory, although I don't know how popular it would be with the general public, in theory, you could turn around and say, hey, wait a minute, the House needs to add a few members, not lose them. Here's the thing. If you want to use the analogy of a car again, all you know is that you're going to have something that's going to go down the road. You don't know if it's going to be four wheels, three wheels. You don't know if it's going to be electric or gas. You don't know if it's going to be steam powered for all that. You don't know if you're going to have it drive on the left, drive in the middle, drive in the right. All you know is you're going to have something that's going down the road. And that's what we're facing with now. The members of the Congressional Redistricting Commission, or the state's redistricting commission, have been handed, this is your assignment. However you do it, do it, as long as it meets these requirements. And those requirements are, as we said, compactness, lines, equality of districts, and considering communities of interest.
John, does the commission have to start with the existing congressional map, or would it be possible for it to go back to square one and draw everything as if this were Michigan year zero?
It does not have to use the existing map. And in fact, it probably won't. There is one consideration that you have to keep in mind. In effect, the Detroit area has to have two Black representatives come out of it. So how do you draw those lines? How do you set that up? It almost invites a situation like, would you have, for example, Brenda Lawrence going up against Rashida Tlaib? Or would you put Rashida Tlaib against Debbie Dingell so that you avoid the possibility of a Black representative losing? I don't know. I mean, that's one of the few constraints that they have to keep in mind. But otherwise, I think you have to go wide open on this now for the getting anything done that makes any kind of sense. I don't know that you keep to the existing map. You have to assume that people are going to still be representing the same basic areas. I mean, you know, it's unlikely that Fred Upton's going to be representing Marquette, for example. But, you know, who knows? In the end, you could be extraordinarily creative as long as you meet the requirements that prohibit gerrymandering, which is what the voters wanted to stop. And that becomes the next question. Once you come up with the lines, I mean, everyone says, oh, this will favor the Republicans or this will favor the Democrats. You have no idea. You have no idea what will happen in the next election. Where will the votes actually come from? Who will actually be affected? It's a wide open situation right now.
John Lindstrom is the former publisher of Gongwer News Service, Michigan. John, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for asking.